your online community for positive change. Seventh Wave Network.
Teach your children well. Their father's hell did slowly go by. And feed them on your dreams. The one they picked, the one you know by.
Welcome to Teach Your Children Well, Hot Topics in Education, with your hosts Rich Weinfeld and Michelle Davis. This program will give parents and educators the skills and methods to effectively advocate for children today. And now, here's Rich and Michelle.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Teach Your Children Well, Hot Topics in Education. I'm Rich Weinfeld.
And hello, everyone. I'm Michelle Davis. Our show is dedicated to excellence in education, and we are going to explore issues every week that relate to schools and school systems, because we believe that with high expectations and an education system that works, we can make the difference between what we are now as a society and what we actually could be. We hope that educators and parents alike will learn tools and strategies to effectively advocate for the children in their lives. And children are our best natural resource, so let's teach our children well and create an education system that works to develop a future of leaders who will make our world a better place to be. And Rich, why don't you tell the listeners what we're up to today and what our topic is all about?
Okay. Michelle and I both, on a daily basis, advocate for kids to get appropriate education, whether they're special education students or gifted education students or a combination of the both. And we feel like in order to effectively advocate, the first thing an advocate needs to know is what are they advocating for? What does that ideal classroom look like? That's something that Michelle and I are going to be emphasizing in our Special Needs Advocacy Institute, which is going to run for the first time the first weekend in October, and we invite you to visit specialneedsadvocacyinstitute.com to learn more about that. But in focusing on that ideal classroom, we are honored today to have a real leader in efforts to educate folks about what does an ideal classroom look like and what should be the elements. And we're calling today's show, If You Haven't Learned It, I Haven't Taught It. And that is a direct quote from today's guest, Carol Ann Tomlinson. And maybe we'll ask her to talk a little bit about that quote. Today we'll ask Carol Ann to talk about, and we'll discuss with her, what does the ideal classroom look like? How would you know if your child has one? How would you as a teacher know if you've developed this ideal? In order to have an outstanding classroom, Michelle and I believe teachers must both challenge and meet the needs of all learners, and the classroom must provide instruction about important concepts in a way that all children can be successful. And so how do teachers plan these lessons that have these characteristics? How will parents know that their children are in fact being educated in this way? We're going to talk about all of that with Carol Ann, who is the author of The Differentiated Classroom, Responding to the Needs of All Learners, as well as countless, and I do mean countless, other books and articles along the same topic. We like to start each week by talking about some of the hot topics of the week that are in the news about education, and I know Michelle and I have both found a couple of topics we want to share with you today. First of all, this is Teacher Appreciation Week, and we both want to say how much we appreciate the many wonderful teachers who enriched our lives, the many wonderful teachers that each of us have worked with, and teachers don't get recognized enough and deserve incredible recognition. One of the hot topics that I came across this week is a way to encourage teachers to get even higher scores on students' test scores, which Michelle and I don't think is the best way to recognize teachers or appreciate them, but it is certainly something that is hot and ongoing in the news. And Education Week this week reported about value-added research methods, which specifically is a way to look at test results to see not just how high students scored, but to look at what kind of trajectory were the students on before they came to the present teacher, and then what difference did this current teacher make in those test results. And the U.S. Department of Education gave the go-ahead for every state to apply for approval to test these growth models as a way to measure annual yearly progress and to really see if students are making the gains. I'm sorry, students and schools are making the gains they should under No Child Left Behind. And Education Week points out that it's problematic because, first of all, looking at any one year is just a snapshot, and some of the experts in the field are really encouraging that a multi-year look would be needed, more than just one year. Also, in some studies that have been done, the teachers that appear to be making the difference one year are not making the difference the next year, and so leads to the question about whether it really is the teachers, whether it may be the students that were placed in their classroom. Are the students being placed randomly, or are principals perhaps choosing to place certain kids with certain teachers, which influence the outcomes? So a lot of things are problematic about this value-added piece, and you know, we would encourage school systems to think more deeply before just jumping on this bandwagon. Michelle, any thoughts about that?
Well, yeah, I'd like to piggyback, actually, on the topic of, you know, I also found in Education Week, you know, what is going to make the difference in our school systems. And, you know, Rich, you and I explored this topic when we had our very first show and we interviewed Todd White.
Yes.
Education Week picks up on the Time Magazine article that we discussed in that show with Todd White, which was How to Make Great Teachers. And Education Week has published an article saying, it's a commentary called The Teaching Penalty. And it starts out by saying, How to Make Great Teachers, referencing again the Time Magazine article, was the cover story of a recent issue of Time Magazine. Forgive us for wondering why there was not a subhead with three words that says it all: pay teachers more. And then Education Week and this commentary goes on to say that compared with other professionals, teachers earn on average about $154 less per week, or almost 14 or 15% less than other people in other professions. And I think that that is, you know, related to the topic that you just talked about, which is how in the world do we encourage good teaching, and how do we continue to explore this very important issue that, of course, is pinnacle in student performance.
And I would refer our listeners back to our first show, which where Todd White from the Milken Family Foundation talked about specific characteristics that they are looking in their evaluation system, looking to develop in teachers, looking to measure in teachers that consider test scores but go way beyond just using test scores to look at other factors as well. And you know, while I'm thinking of that, I want to remind listeners that you can hear any of our old shows either by going to the voiceamerica.com website or by going to our own website at specialneedsadvocacyinstitute.com.
Hey, Rich, there's a lot happening in Florida. I'll go ahead and talk about that as another hot topic.
Great.
In Florida, there are the McKay vouchers, and these vouchers allow the purpose of the vouchers is to allow parents to choose or select where their students will go to school, whether the students have special needs. The vouchers allow for funding, public funding for private schools, for example. And there's an article of April 29th, 2008 in the Washington Times by Marcus Winters co-authored, and it talks about how 14% of public school students have been diagnosed with a disability and receive special education services, which sounds pretty high to me.
Mm-hmm.
And the first-of-its-kind McKay program has offered vouchers to students with disabilities, but also just students in general. And the McKay program has grown rapidly and is really the largest school system voucher program. So that got reauthorized, and we're going to continue to keep track of different ways that parents can exercise school choice options.
And we have an upcoming show, I think it's perhaps June or early July, talking about school choice and school vouchers, the pros and cons, and I know it's a hot issue on both sides of that, so we'll explore that in detail. Another article that I came across, this was from eSchool News, which is an online news service, really gives a good preview of our next show, which next week we're going to have Ray Kurzweil, who is an inventor of many things, but I guess Michelle and I are most interested in the fact that he's invented the Kurzweil 3000 reading assistive technology that allows any print material to be scanned and read aloud to the students, and has many other wonderful features as well. And we're going to have Ray talk about that technology and also about what he sees as some future trends, as he's a brilliant futurist. I came across this article, Blogging Helps Encourage Teen Writing, and this was an in-depth study that was done by Pew Internet and American Life Project in support from the College Board National Commission on Writing. And interesting results, while they did not find a correlation between kids who have more gadgets, cell phones, their own computers, and just having the gadgets didn't have any impact on their interest or performance in writing, the kids who were blogging, who were spending time posting online, there was a definite correlation between that and their overall interest in writing, their overall performance in writing. So, you know, I think, you know, thinking ahead to our discussion with Ray, we want to really explore how can all that's going on with technology and all of the interest that today's generation has in things technological, how can that inspire greater performance and skills? And also, conversely, what should we be doing in our schools that really prepares students to be using the technology as adults that they're going to be using on a daily basis? Are our schools keeping up with that? Are they really preparing kids for what they're going to be facing?
That's a really important issue, and, you know, I think different ways to explore the classroom, including online classrooms, and we're going to be exploring that with Ray Kurzweil clearly, but, you know, one of the things that has captured my attention in the news this week is teacher cuts, teacher rifts, and I found a commonality in California and in Paris. In California, the teachers are facing almost 15,000 job cuts. And in Paris, France, the same number may be cut. And the students actually had a rally or a demonstration to oppose this, holding signs up RIP to the national education system and fewer teachers, more students fail. I think that in this climate of, you know, budgetary confinements, along with you know, what it takes to really explore great teaching, I hope that our guest today, who we'll introduce after the break that's coming up, will certainly help us to understand the relationship here and the complex issues that we're facing.
Hey, we look forward to speaking at length with Carol Ann Tomlinson when we come back from this break.
And you,
you're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Are you paying too much for term life insurance? There's a price war among the major term life carriers. Consider these possible rates. A man age 45, non-tobacco user, could obtain $1 million of coverage for as little as $75 a month, and this rate is fixed for the next 10 years. We specialize in policies of $500,000 and above. A man age 50, non-tobacco user, may be able to obtain $500,000 of coverage for as little as $115 per month, and this rate is fixed for the next 20 years. That's right, guaranteed not to change for 20 years. We have great rates for smokers too. For new or replacement term life insurance, call the Term Lifeline now. 800-890-5075. 800-890-5075. That's 800-890-5075.
How can we be powerful advocates for the children in our lives? How do we ensure that they're getting the best education possible? The Special Needs Advocacy Training Institute prepares parents and educators to be outstanding advocates for school success. The Training Institute is based on Rich Weinfeld and Michelle Davis's Special Needs Advocacy Resource Book. The book is comprehensive, practical, and easy to read. Visit SpecialNeedsAdvocacyInstitute.com to learn more about this dynamic training opportunity. Parents, are you concerned with your child's progress at school? Educators, do you wish that you could do more for your class? Are you interested in pursuing a career in educational advocacy? At SpecialNeedsAdvocacyInstitute.com, you'll learn how to make a difference in the lives of children. You will also find information about Rich and Michelle's consulting and advocacy services. Our children need powerful advocates to ensure that they're getting an appropriate education. Visit SpecialNeedsAdvocacyInstitute.com to learn what you can do to more effectively advocate for the children in your life.
A fresh look at today's health. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Teach your children well.
You're listening to Teach Your Children Well, Hot Topics in Education with hosts Rich Weinfeld and Michelle Davis. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or tip regarding today's topic, give us a call toll-free at 866-472-5792. That number again is 866-472-5792. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to Teach Your Children Well with myself, Michelle Davis, and my co-host, Rich Weinfeld. And I'm going to introduce today's extraordinary guest, Carol Ann Tomlinson. Dr. Tomlinson's career as an educator is extensive and expansive, including 21 years as a public school teacher, 12 years as program administrators, Virginia's Teacher of the Year in 1974, and she's been a member and studied at the University of Virginia. She is a reviewer for numerous journals and an author of over 100 articles, book chapters, books, and other professional development materials. And Carol, if I just read some of your publications, I think the listeners will get a sense of what you're all about. And those are How to Differentiate Instruction in a Mixed Ability Classroom, The Differentiated Classroom, Responding to the Needs of All Learners, Providing Leadership for Differentiated Schools and Classrooms, and differentiation is definitely the theme here. And I don't want to neglect to say that I had the absolute privilege of having Dr. Tomlinson as one of my professors undergraduate many, many, many years ago. Well, actually not that many, right, Carol?
Yeah, really, let's not go too far there.
And I hope that you'll understand if I say that we have always, we, meaning myself and other educators, have always thought of you as the queen of differentiated instruction, and your contributions have been uncountable, and I'm sure continue to affect children's lives positively. So I've thanked you privately, but I'll thank you publicly for your role in my launch in my special education career. So welcome very much, and thank you so much for being here.
It's a privilege to be with you and with your audience.
Thank you for being here, Carol.
You know, Carol, we're talking about today, what is an ideal classroom? And I guess I'd like to start off by asking you, why is it important that we explore this topic?
Well, I think the question before that is, what do we really want to have happen in schools for our students? And if we just kind of like to keep them off the streets or self-contained, then, you know, probably doesn't matter too much. As long as you have something that resembles a Marine Corps drill sergeant in the classroom, it should work fine. But if we really believe that teaching and learning is a process of constructing lives, then those of us who believe that what happens in the classroom really does shape how students come to see themselves as human beings, how they come to see each other as human beings, and how they come to see themselves as learners. And learning, for me, really is one of the great human gifts. It's one of the marks of being a human being. And so, for me, a classroom that really is going to work for students is one that helps them develop certainly a certain amount of self-confidence, but also really a sense of self-efficacy, this sense of being a person who is powerful in their own learning and for whom learning has merit and benefits. And learning is sort of a dicey thing. We don't all get it the first time, and sometimes some of us get it faster than others. And because school and really much of life focuses on this notion of learning and success, then how that whole process is presented in a classroom either makes it satisfying to learn or too risky to learn, makes it too easy, in which case kids don't grow, or makes it too difficult, in which case students give up. So there really is, raising young lives is a tricky thing, which I think most parents know. It's not something that kids do too well on their own. And so we need teachers who really can make classrooms work for kids so that kids see themselves as increasingly more powerful learners and develop both the skills and the motivation to continue that process.
That's so well put. It's just a beautiful statement about the intention behind learning. You know, Rich and I were talking, and we both see so many classrooms on such a regular basis, just week in and week out, all over different states, and we have the opportunity to really snapshot different classrooms. And, you know, there's some type of affective, I mean, I can see the classroom, I can hear the classroom, I experience the classroom in a real way, but then there's also seems to be a feeling of where you walk out of an ideal classroom and you say, wow, that's an ideal classroom. What do you think that is, and can you quantify that?
Well, I don't know that you can quantify it, but I do think we have some indicators that we've known for a long time, and is that as you said, we can see them present or absent in almost any classroom we enter. For one thing, I think it's a different kind of endeavor to teach young people than it is to do many other jobs, which is not to negate the importance of what other people do, but there are not too many other jobs where the person in charge is up front of 30 kids at a time, all day long, day after day. And that can be both wearing and exhilarating. I think one of the things that makes an ideal classroom is a teacher who really sees the power of that job and understands that it's not about going to school and spending a certain number of hours there and then leaving, but it really is about going to engage human beings with something. And so a teacher, I think, in an ideal classroom, and to me all that means is a classroom that really works for kids, is one who comes in excited about what they're going to do that day, something that kids can discover, something that will be curious, something that will push their thinking forward, something that will push their emotional buttons a little bit. But in the same way that all of us get excited about sharing with a friend a movie that we saw that was wonderful, or a really cool thing we saw outdoors, or a book that we've just read, or a gizmo that we've just discovered someplace that's really fascinating, the teacher who's fascinated with that process of something cool is going to happen in here today really starts an energy and a dynamic, I think, that is critical. But to me, a second part of that that's equally important is being fascinated by the kids that come in the room every day. One of the great privileges of teaching, I think, is that there are no two lives alike and there are no two days alike. And, of course, it's sometimes a little scary that you can't predict the day, but you can pretty much guarantee that you'll have something happen every day that you couldn't anticipate and that will challenge your abilities. I think a great teacher has two fascinations. I think they are really fascinated by the ideas that they teach and want to learn more and more about those ideas. Many moons ago, I read a book by a guy named Phil Phoenix who really reshaped my teaching. He said that when human beings finally were able to break away from spending all day building fires and cooking woolly mammoths and got a little bit of leisure time, they began to organize knowledge according to the disciplines. And each of the disciplines, Phoenix says, answers the same question, and that is, what is life and who am I in it? And Phoenix says human beings are born asking that question, and in essence we die asking that question. And he says each of the disciplines was developed to help answer that question. Science answers it, history answers it, art answers it, literature. And he says our job really as teachers is to help learners see how it is that the discipline we're teaching helps them understand their lives. A teacher who's fascinated with their discipline in that way, I think, goes into the classroom with a real energy. But the second thing that teachers need to study with as much excitement and as much depth and persistence is each of those individual kids. And to understand that there's this endless parade of human lives, which certainly have things in common but also have differences, and that we're privileged to learn from those lives and to become better in interacting with them, means that great teachers, I think, consistently ponder those two things. What's the meaning of what I'm teaching, and who is it that I'm teaching? And then for me, teaching becomes this wonderful thing of being able to say, I have the coolest job. I get to teach people that I really value, ideas that I really value. And as you noted, my passion is differentiation, and that kicks in by saying, and whatever it takes to make that connection work for each student, I'll do it. So I think the ideal classroom really is predicated in large measure on a teacher who cares deeply about students, cares deeply about ideas, wants to connect students with ideas, and wants to connect students with each other. And I think you do see that and feel that in some classrooms, and in others it's missing.
Carol, I've had the privilege to hear you speak many times and read many of your books, and the last time I heard you speak, one little sentence just stuck with me and keeps coming back to me every day, which is, if you haven't learned it, I haven't taught it. I'd love to hear you just expound on that a little bit.
That's actually, I think, a quote from Bena Kallik, who's a wonderful educator, and I find it both challenging and pesky, because it's absolutely true, but it makes our job harder. And I think it's something we don't talk about too much with teachers. Her comment is, there's no such thing as teaching without learning. If they haven't learned it, you haven't taught it. And what that does is really remind us that it's about the kids.
Right.
And if we know what's important, our job isn't to stand in the front of the room and cover stuff or dispense things. It's to make sure learning happens. And I think she's absolutely correct that only when students learn what really matters have we taught well.
Carol, what do you think is, you know, I what resonates for me when I recall being in your classroom is this self-evaluation piece in an ideal classroom. Can you talk a little bit about that? I know we haven't gotten to differentiation quite yet, which we will do at the, you know, the next segment, but what is the role of a student self-evaluating their learning in this type of environment that we're talking about?
I think kids are born wanting power over their world from early on. They even cry in a way that tells mom whether they need a diaper changed or need food. And constantly what they're wanting to do is have more dominion over their world, being more in charge of themselves. And I think in the classroom we do best if we understand that learning happens in students, not to them. And so consequently I think we're the best teachers when we help students understand what learning goals are, and what success would look like, and what the requirements are for moving themselves toward that success, and when we engage them in the process of constantly reflecting on themselves, in other words, being learners who can guide their own work rather than being puppets and waiting for the puppeteer to come by. And so helping students understand, what are the goals today, what's the game plan, how will I know if I'm getting where I need to be, what do I do if I get bogged down? What resources can I use to help myself here? All of those things really empower students to become people in charge of their own lives and in charge of their own learning, and I think really should be a critical part of a classroom.
Those are really skills that we use on a day-to-day basis in our adult lives as well. So I love that transferability of that that piece in an effective classroom. And we'll be right back after a short break with Dr. Carol Ann Tomlinson.
Your life, your health, your network. Voice America Health and Wellness.
How can we be powerful advocates for the children in our lives? How do we ensure that they're getting the best education possible? The Special Needs Advocacy Training Institute prepares parents and educators to be outstanding advocates for school success. The Training Institute is based on Rich Weinfeld and Michelle Davis's Special Needs Advocacy Resource Book. The book is comprehensive, practical, and easy to read. Visit SpecialNeedsAdvocacyInstitute.com to learn more about this dynamic training opportunity. Parents, are you concerned with your child's progress at school? Educators educators. Do you wish that you could do more for your class? Are you interested in pursuing a career in educational advocacy? At SpecialNeedsAdvocacyInstitute.com, you'll learn how to make a difference in the lives of children. You will also find information about Rich and Michelle's consulting and advocacy services. Our children need powerful advocates to ensure that they're getting an appropriate education. Visit SpecialNeedsAdvocacyInstitute.com to learn what you can do to more effectively advocate for the children in your life.
When I have an asthma attack, I feel scared. It's like tiny nails in the air poke my lungs. I start to cough.
Did you know your child's asthma attacks can be triggered by things like shower curtains, a blanket, even a teddy bear?
I feel like I'm choking.
And there are many other things in your home and your child's classroom you may not know about. For the latest information, call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS.
Sometimes my parents have to take me to the hospital.
Help prevent your child's asthma attacks and avoid the emergency room. Call toll-free 1-866-NO-ATTACKS. That's 1-866-662-8822. Or visit www.noattacks.org.
I don't want to feel like a fish with no water.
Brought to you by the EPA and the Ad Council.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Teach your children well.
You're listening to Teach Your Children Well, Hot Topics in Education with hosts Rich Weinfeld and Michelle Davis. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or tip regarding today's topic, give us a call toll-free at 866-472-5792. That number again is 866-472-5792. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back. This is Rich Weinfeld along with my co-host Michelle Davis and our guest today, Dr. Carol Ann Tomlinson. We're talking about the ideal classroom. Before we get into the next segment, I want to encourage you not only to call in, but also to email us at specialneedsadvocacy@msn.com. I did that right, Michelle, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. We're talking about the positives today, about what a great classroom looks like, what a great teacher does, fitting for Teacher Appreciation Week. To flip over to the negative for a second, in our book, Michelle and I, and our Special Needs Advocacy Resource book, we have a list of what might a classroom look like if it's not a good environment for children. And I'm just going to highlight two of the things that I think really pertain to the next part of our discussion. Carol, we say only whole group instruction is being used, and if there are groupings in the class, they always remain the same. Can you talk to us a little bit about differentiation and about how differentiation maybe combats those two pitfalls of a class that's not working?
Sure. Of course, differentiation is a complex topic, so I'll try to do the nickel version. But
yes.
Differentiation really is simply common sense. I think all of us as adults have had moments where we thought if the teacher went over something one more time, we'd scream because it feels like she's been doing it for 2 weeks and we knew it 2 weeks ago. And I hope most of us have also had the experience of being in a classroom and feeling totally lost and not having any real sense of what we do next to get out of what feels like a mud trap. Differentiation simply says that kids do differ when they come to us in their readiness to learn particular things, in how they learn, and in what really motivates them, what they care about, and that teachers who teach best really try to attend to students' readiness needs so that work is a little too hard for a particular student most of the time and there's a support system to get them over the hump, that teachers really try to open up the classroom and provide a variety of ways to learn and express learning so that students' learning profiles can be addressed, and that teachers try really hard to connect students' interests with the things that they have to teach so that students see as relevant and worthwhile what they're learning. And there are a number of principles of differentiation, but in regard to the question that you particularly ask, one of the key principles is the principle of flexible grouping. And what that really asks teachers to do is, after they've thought about the flow of a week or the flow of a unit, to say, when is it going to be really important to put students together in groups based on readiness so that I can teach right to their needs? When is it going to make better sense to put students in mixed readiness groups so that they can learn from each other or share ideas? When is it going to make sense to put them in groups based on particular interests so they can make those connections? Maybe sometimes it'd be a good idea to put them in groups based on mixed interests so kids can bring different perspectives on a topic. When can I put kids together based just on how they want to express their learning? When is it better for the teacher to make the decision about grouping? When does it make best sense for kids to make that decision? And might it be okay sometimes just to put kids together randomly? The assumption of flexible grouping is that when students see themselves in a variety of settings, they don't feel pegged into one particular mold. They don't feel like they're a certain thing that they're expected to be. Certainly students of any age, for example, know whether they're reading well or doing math well.
Mm-hmm.
But in a flexibly differentiated grouped classroom, that's not the only thing that matters. I may be in a readiness group sometimes, but maybe in an interest group or a random group at other times. And that lets kids audition each other in different settings, lets teachers see kids in different settings, help kids realize that they have multifaceted personalities and ways of learning and expressing learning. And it's really often the case that in such a classroom, a student really becomes a very different person because they're not always the geek, they're not always the kid who can't do math, they're not always the kid who dominates the group. And so it really helps kids have a much better stock-taking of themselves, I think. Having students in groups is important, even if you don't differentiate instruction, because once again, learning is sort of a communal process. Certainly if the teacher's doing all the talking and the kids are doing all the listening, not much processing is going on. But it's also
That's on our list as well, by the way, Carol.
I'm sorry?
That's also on our list of what might a classroom look like if it's not a good environment,
yeah,
is
right.
The teacher's doing all the talking.
Yeah, and kids have to learn, and they need to talk to each other to learn. It's a way to get additional ideas to correct misconceptions. And for many students, that notion of being with a group of peers is a real high motivator as well. And it's important not to have kids in the same groups all the time, because then what you get is bluebirds, buzzards, and wombats. You have a clear group of losers, a clear group
right.
of winners, and that doesn't really help anybody at all.
Right. I think it's very clear what you're saying, but just to underline it one more time, what is the difference between what you're proposing and tracking kids?
Well, to me, they're the antithesis. And it's a big decision for us in education. We sort of have three choices about how we deal with student differences, and student differences do exist. I don't know that I've ever met a teacher who said, oh, no, they're all alike. They exist, and so we have three choices of how to deal with them. We can throw all the kids in the classroom and pretend the differences don't exist and teach them as though they were all alike, and that doesn't work. We have ample evidence there. We can track kids and we say, okay, I get it, the classroom teacher should have sort of normal or regular or grade level kids. Anybody who doesn't fit that mold will address their needs by putting them in special classes. So if you are kind of broken because you have a learning disability, we'll put you over here. And if you're kind of broken because you learn slowly, we'll put you over here. And if you're kind of broken because you don't have a full command of English yet, we'll stick you over here. And if you're kind of broken because you know more than the teacher meant you to, we'll stick you over here in this room. And interestingly, in our society now, as we become more and more diverse, pretty soon I think that classroom teacher who's waiting for the normal kids is going to be in a classroom pretty much alone. But what that ends up with is that we have kids, again, that we are developing expectations for. Here are rooms full of kids that can't learn very well, and so therefore what we'll do is sort of lower our expectations and not push them very hard and make structures much more rigid. And it's very easy to see what starts happening to those kids in that classroom. And even high-end kids can suffer from being in classrooms where they begin to believe that ability is an entitlement, or that they have to compete all the time, or that they're supposed to be perfect in all things, and where perhaps they don't see contributions that other people can clearly make to their lives. So tracking is the second way that we do try to deal with students' differences. But again, we have a hefty amount of research that suggests to us that's not a particularly effective way of dealing with it. The third way I think we can deal with students' differences is differentiated instruction, and that is to say, let's create classrooms that represent the world and have diverse learners in them. But within that context, let's work in such a way that we attend to students' needs, where they can still be in a community of learners and share together, but still have those needs addressed. So to me, tracking and differentiation really are antithetical. You can certainly differentiate and attract class. That's not the point. Mm-hmm. But the point is that to do that, you've already lost part of the battle.
What do you say, Carol, to educators or parents who might have a fairness issue? You know, if kids are being treated differently, how is that fair related to academics or behavior?
Well, I don't. I think if folks who were parents thought of their own children, it wouldn't take particularly long to find out that treating everybody alike is not necessarily fair. If you have one kid in a family who loves baseball, most of us wouldn't make all the other kids in the family play baseball even if they hated it just because this one kid likes it, nor would we want to rob that one kid of the chance to play baseball. I think most parents have had the experience of students, of kids who don't need as much sleep, and the kids that they have, that they know if they don't get extra sleep, they're in real trouble. We'd never make the kids all eat the same amount at dinner, regardless of whether they were hungry or the same size. So we and seldom do we make all the kids in the family wear identical clothes when they leave the house. So I think the notion of fairness really is probably best seen as doing what we need to do to help each kid succeed and making sure that each kid gets that kind of help rather than force-fitting them all to do the same thing in the same way at the same time.
Carol, we in education have been hearing about and talking about differentiation, I'd say, for at least two decades. Why is it so hard to get schools to do this well? Why is it so hard to get individual teachers to do this?
That's a really great question. It's also got a very long answer, but I'll try to be short. I'm not very good at short. Well, change is hard, and we know that in our own lives. Most of us understand what we need to do with exercise and diet, and we're pretty clear on that, and we even believe it would make a difference for us if we did it. But we don't do that very well because change is just really pesky, and it's certainly not easy to change when you're surrounded by 30 young bodies and life's going full speed ahead.
Mm-hmm.
So change is hard. The second thing is that most of us learned habits of one-size-fits-all instruction, and differentiation really causes us to have to rethink not only those habits, but our attitudes and our beliefs about teaching. It really calls for changing what folks call deep structure beliefs, and so we have to work in such a way that we're not only changing our practice, but we're changing our mindset, and that makes it difficult as well. But in schools where we see good differentiation happening, how they got there is not real magic. It's a leader who understands very clearly what the need is and then consistently leads and supports teachers in that direction over a long period of time. And when you have intelligent leadership moving toward a clear goal and the faculty becomes a community of learners in the same way that you want that to happen in a classroom, the change is pretty amazing to watch. Our trouble is that we often mandate something like differentiation and then leave teachers hanging there to figure out how to do it on their own. Or we'll have a staff where somebody says, okay, we'll do differentiation this year, and what that means is we'll have one speaker and read a book.
Right.
And
so what I'm hearing is, you know, you have to do it with support, with training. I'm gonna end this segment. We're going to be back in a couple of minutes with Carol Ann and continue this wonderful conversation. See you in a few minutes.
Helping you make informed decisions for your life. This is Voice America Health and Wellness.
Life can be full of risks. One thing you shouldn't take a risk with ever is your family's health insurance. If you're self-employed or an individual and you need affordable health insurance, you need to make this free call right now and see how the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company can help you get it. We specialize in helping the self-employed and individuals just like you who need affordable health insurance to get it. So call us right now. 888-459-4825. 888-459-4825. 459-4825. Don't take a risk with your family's health insurance. It's not worth it. If you're self-employed or an individual and you need affordable health insurance, call us now and see how we can help you. 888-459-4825. 888-459-4825. 888-459-4825. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
How can we be powerful advocates for the children in our lives? How do we ensure that they're getting the best education possible? The Special Needs Advocacy Training Institute prepares parents and educators to be outstanding advocates for school success. The Training Institute is based on Rich Weinfeld and Michelle Davis's Special Needs Advocacy Resource Book. The book is comprehensive, practical, and easy to read. Visit SpecialNeedsAdvocacyInstitute.com to learn more about this dynamic training opportunity. Parents, are you concerned with your child's progress at school? Educators, do you wish that you could do more for your class? Are you interested in pursuing a career in educational advocacy? At SpecialNeedsAdvocacyInstitute.com, you'll learn how to make a difference in the lives of children. You will also find information about Rich and Michelle's consulting and advocacy services. Our children need powerful advocates to ensure that they're getting an appropriate education. Visit SpecialNeedsAdvocacyInstitute.com to learn what you can do to more effectively advocate for the children in your life.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Teach your children well.
You're listening to Teach Your Children Well, Hot Topics in Education with hosts Rich Weinfeld and Michelle Davis. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or tip regarding today's topic, give us a call toll-free at 866-472-5792. That number again is 866-472-5792. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to Teach Your Children Well. I'm Michelle Davis, and we're here with my co-host, Rich Weinfeld, and our extraordinary guest, Dr. Carol Ann Tomlinson. And Carol, before we get to the subject of No Child Left Behind and highly qualified teachers and what that has to do with differentiated instruction and the ideal classroom, I have a question, which is, does size really matter in terms of class size?
Yeah, that's really a great question, and I'm asked that often. Research is kind of odd in that way. It doesn't tell us that class size makes a huge difference. You have to get down to something very, very small, smaller than most of us will ever have, before you start seeing a direct connection there. But I've never known a teacher who says, oh, I don't care if I have 25 or 35, it's all the same to me. I think there's so many ways that, again, this means teachers who want to make a difference. But teachers who want to make a difference can reach out to 25 better than they can 35. They can know those students better. They can move them around in the classroom better. And so while research may suggest to us that class size isn't the key indicator of student success, I believe it affects teacher attitude and teacher energy. And I think it is a good thing when we can to lower the class size. I just don't get any logic that doesn't matter. It may not in a classroom where a teacher is just simply going to stand and cover material, but for teachers who really want to reach out and make a difference, I have to believe it matters.
So if I'm hearing you right, we would agree that you can have a very, very small class size, and if we don't have a teacher who's interested in this idea of the mindset of a differentiated classroom, then that can be far from an ideal classroom. Well, on the other hand, you can have a larger size classroom, a typical size classroom, with a teacher who is powerfully delivering on the things that we're talking about, and that can be an ideal classroom.
You bet. I'll give you a great illustration from an email I got a couple of weeks ago from a teacher in China, actually. And she was talking about the fact that differentiation was really important to her and how it was changing her teaching, and that she could see her students were doing better. And she listed for me many things that she was doing in her classroom to reach out to different students and that she was looking forward to doing more things. And then she said to me, but I wrote to ask you just one question. I'm wondering if you could give me any hints to make it easier to manage a differentiated classroom when you have 60 students.
Oh.
And I thought to myself, oh my goodness, I think we would not have a good conversation with you and many of our classroom teachers here. She simply took it for granted that even with 60 students, she could do better than just stand and deliver.
Oh,
and she's really working well at that. Now, would I prefer that she have 30? Sure. And would she? Absolutely. But I think teachers who mean to make it work, make it work.
I'd have to be seated when I got that question. Sitting down for that
yeah.
one. Now, does the same thing occur in terms of the qualification of teachers, especially in light of No Child Left Behind and the requirement for, you know, as of the school year 2005-2006, that all teachers be highly qualified? Can you have a highly qualified teacher and not have an ideal classroom, and how does that work?
Sure, you can absolutely have a highly qualified teacher that doesn't reach out to students, which is not to say that it doesn't matter to have teachers that are qualified. It's just that, you know, lots of times we become enamored of words, and qualified can mean a lot of different things in a lot of different settings. I would certainly want teachers to know content who were going to teach children I cared about. But qualified doesn't have anything much to do on paper with knowing students or having a particular attitude about teaching. And if we go back to what I said in the beginning, with teaching as being really passionate about what you teach and who you teach, highly qualified doesn't even ensure passion about what you teach. It just ensures that you may know some stuff. So it's absolutely possible that you can have a person who's on paper highly qualified and not doing very much at all to make a classroom work well for its students. And I've worked with teachers who would never make it over that highly qualified benchmark because they simply have not had the opportunity to specialize in content, but they are absolutely tuned in to their students and absolutely know what they're teaching and know how to make it work well. So I'm not suggesting that qualifications don't matter. I'm just suggesting that one set of qualifications, a one-size-fits-all that only looks at one or two facets of what needs to happen in the classroom isn't going to save us.
Carol, when we talk about highly qualified teachers, you know, I think about highly qualified in content, and makes me think about the book that you wrote with Jay McTighe where the concepts of differentiated instruction and understanding by design were married together. In the brief time we have left, could you talk a little bit about the importance of understanding by design and how it coincides with differentiated instruction?
Sure. Jay McTighe, who's one of the two authors with Grant Wiggins of Understanding by Design, is passionate about the quality of curriculum in a classroom. And Jay believes, as do I, that And as most of our research would indicate, that we really don't get learners by teaching them the telephone book, just a list of data. The brain isn't even designed very well to retain that. And kids who learn that way can't retain, they can't transfer, they can't apply, they don't appreciate what they're learning. And so Jay and Grant have developed a model to help teachers teach all students with what they call the big ideas or the essential understandings of the disciplines at the core of what is taught. And so Jay's model really helps teachers try to work through this notion of what does it mean to teach for meaning, to teach for understanding. That's a curriculum model. Differentiation is an instructional model. It says it really matters how you teach. If you don't reach kids, you haven't gotten anywhere. So let's look at how you go about reaching kids, how you go about helping kids really be learners. And so actually, of course, what differentiation and understanding by design do is help teachers understand that it takes curriculum and instruction to make a classroom work, and that if the models are in sync, they're a good match. And so what we've done with understanding by design and differentiation is to try to show teachers how to begin with important content and then how to reach out to make sure that the full variety of students has access to and success with that content. In other words, it really is just the blending of curriculum and instruction, which should, of course, be the case.
Absolutely. And Carol, in the brief time that we have left, and again, we've appreciated you being our guest so much and providing this inspiration for us, but, you know, How does the high-stakes testing related to No Child Left Behind affect teacher ability to differentiate, and what do you see as future trends? What would you like to see in the future in terms of the priorities for education?
Well, I think there's no problem with teachers being accountable. I want doctors to be accountable, and I want the architect who builds the building that I'm in to be accountable. My complaint is that we've not had a discussion about what we want teachers to be accountable for. We've decided sometimes that just a lot of answers checked on a right answer test is accountability. Our students are going into a world where it's projected that they're going to have many, many, many jobs even before their 30th birthday because so many things are changing. We have so many jobs now that didn't even exist 10 or 15 years ago. And so we need to prepare kids as thinkers and reasoners and good consumers of ideas, good critics of ideas. So I don't mind accountability. I'd love for us to ask the question, what kind of accountability will make our students stronger? When everything is pushed to a right answer test, then right answers become the currency of the classroom. And that stops us really from doing a lot of things. It stops us from engaging kids' minds. It stops us from looking at individual differences and asking how we help each kid become the best that he or she can be. We just try to reduce everybody to a single test score. And not only do we judge students that way, but we judge teachers that way and we judge schools that way. And while there may be some benefits to what we have done with the right answer mania over the last few years, I think we've long since milked those out and really need to look at a broader sense of what it is we need our kids to become and what kinds of classrooms will support that.
Dr. Tomlinson, we're going to conclude on that note. Thank you so much for being with us. It's been great, a lot for all of us to think about. Next week, we're going to have Ray Kurzweil with us to talk about technology in the classroom, how it's transforming what we do in the classroom, how classrooms need to transform to keep up with what's happening with technology. Look forward to being with you then.
They see the truth before they can die.
Thanks so much for listening to this week's edition of Teach Your Children Well, Hot Topics in Education. Join your hosts Rich Weinfeld and Michelle Davis again next Friday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time, 12 noon Eastern Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel.
Teach your children well.